For Longwave, it's time for the Daily Service, led by Francis Finn. You're listening to Radio 4 FM, where it's time for our Book of the Week and more from the new biography of the poet T.S. Eliot. Tom is off to Harvard. Later, he'll go further afield to absorb more intellectual influences in Young Eliot by Robert Crawford.
Tom's parents had secured him accommodation at 52 Mount Auburn Street, right at the heart of Harvard's Gold Coast. Almost all Harvard men in Tom's day were white, many from the creme de la creme of exclusive New England private high schools. Under the ambitious leadership of President Charles W. Eliot, Harvard had attracted outstanding tenured and visiting faculty. Leading American intellectuals, such as philosopher and psychologist William James, Henry James's brother, fellow philosopher Josiah Royce, and polymathic critic Irving Babbitt were distinguished figures around the campus. Between 1906 and 1910, when he graduated Master of Arts, Tom selected courses that indulged a taste for roaming across cultures, from ancient Greece and Rome, through the Middle Ages, to modern English, French, and German. Costing just $10 to join, the union gave student members access to dining rooms, reading rooms, and facilities including a billiard room and a barber shop. In the 100-foot-long living room, wood fires blazed and great open hearths in winter, while students lounged around, reading, or took coffee and refreshments at small tables. Tom liked to wander upstairs to the Union Library, its windows overlooking the lawns, its shelves stocked with over 6,000 books in three connecting rooms. He enjoyed pursuing his private reading as much as his coursework. When they recalled Tom, shy is the word fellow students regularly associated with him. Yet, as an undergraduate, Tom belonged to several societies, among them the Digamma. Elected while a sophomore, Tom survived his initiation and went on to become the club's treasurer for 1908 to 9. Treasurer Tom was also the club's librarian and balladist. Within a close group of fellow diners, Tom delighted in coming up with carnivalesque and taboo-breaking verses that might have made his mother pass out. Carefully dressed and well-mannered, there was a side of Tom that strove to rebel against the proprieties of an upbringing soused in Unitarianism. By the end of his freshman year, Tom was already publishing verse in the Harvard Advocate, a single 8-line poem with its flowers and withered petals. Tom's song in the Advocate of the 26th of May, 1907, was two stanzas long. In the first semester of his third year, his work resurfaced as Before Morning, in the issue of the 13th of November, 1908. Another two-stanza lyric with petal on petal of withered flowers. A withering parody appeared in the Harvard Lampoon, with the Lampoon spoofer swapping Tom's poetic flowers for bottles of milk. To be lampooned was a distinction of a sort. Tom had been spotted staggering from a drinks party, or punch, held at the Lampoon's office, probably in spring 1908. Conrad Aitken, an eagerly prolific poet who published frequently in The Advocate, remembered one of their earliest encounters. Aitken was strolling along with a mutual friend when a singularly attractive, tall and rather dapper young man, with a somewhat Lamian smile, reeled out of the door of the Lampoon on a spring evening and threw his arms about me. "And that," observed my astonished companion, "if Tom remembers tomorrow, will cause him to suffer agonies of shyness." Tom's shyness did not inhibit his developing friendship with Aitken, with whom he liked to go to the Grand Opera House in the city's South End, a poor part of town, where there were cheap restaurants and saloons familiar to hookers and petty crooks. After seeing a vaudeville show, Tom and Aitken would sometimes drink in a nearby bar Tom recalled as the Opera Exchange. The bartender was among the prototypes for the character of Sweeney in some of his mature poems. In the Union Library, Tom's eye was caught by Arthur Symonds, The Symbolist Movement in Literature, just imported from London. Symonds' book was full of modern French poets, whose behaviour would have horrified Lottie Elliot. Probably Tom had been reading Baudelaire for some time, but Symonds' book, with its account of Jules Lafourgue and other poets, took him beyond Baudelaire. In Symonds' bibliography, Tom noticed mention of Lafourgue's three-volume Oeuvre complète, published in 1902-3. He ordered all three to be shipped from Paris. This was the feast Tom had been waiting for. Lafourgue played subversively with religion. He flaunted his disconcerting sense of sex. Lafourgue's devices, such as snapping off bits of the Lord's Prayer or mixing classical mythology with modern tawdriness and boredom, would become Eliotic hallmarks. Lafourgue's sense of windy desolation, ennui, and néant, nothingness, a favourite word, haunts some of Tom's early poems. By the end of 1909, he was beginning to imitate Lafourgue in his own Nocturne and Humoresque, both published in The Advocate. Lafourgue released in him a new music, a fresh voice. This emergent, ironic sound came at first a little falteringly, yet soon became not the acoustic of an undergraduate imitator, but the uncannily recognisable voice of T.S. Eliot. In December 1909, he was nominated Odist of the Class of 1910. His mother wrote, "You must be sure and secure tickets when the time comes for father and me to hear your ode." He mentioned too that he would like to go to Paris. His mother made her disapproval clear in April 1910. "I cannot bear to think of you being alone in Paris. The very words give me a chill." On the 24th of June, Harvard's lawns were verdant after the previous week's rain. During the graduation ceremonies, Tom's proud parents heard the class ode recited by Thomas Stearns Eliot, and then sung by the class to the tune of Fair Harvard. Tom had secured a petite chambre in the Latin Quarter of Paris, in a house looked after by an old French couple, the Casaubons. Madame Casaubon refreshed lodgers with tea from her gleaming silver teapot, and white-bearded Monsieur Casaubon was strikingly elegant. At the Pension Casaubon, Tom grew close to a French lodger, medical student Jean-Jules Verdenal. Tom was delighted by how much they shared, from a taste for Lafourgue's poetry to philosophical interests and astutely ironic observations. Tom was so clever and complicated that he almost never found a kindred spirit, which made his friendship with Jean Verdenal matter all the more. It stayed with him for a terrible reason. In 1934, recalling that year in Paris, Tom confessed that my own respect is touched by a sentimental sunset, the memory of a friend coming across the Luxembourg Gardens in late afternoon, waving a branch of lilac, a friend who was later, so far as I could find out, to be mixed with the mud of Gallipoli. When Tom published the first collection of poems, he added the simple dedication, "For Jean Verdenal, 1889-1915. Situated a short stroll from the Sorbonne, where Tom was enrolled as a foreign student, the Pension Casaubon stood between a poultry shop and a café-restaurant at 151 B Rue Saint-Jacques. Above the pension's doorway was a balcony with an ornamental wrought iron railing. A street lamp stood right beside the front door, and at night it lit up rows of plucked fowls hanging in the poulterer's window. At the Sorbonne, the great Jewish thinker Emil Durkheim established sociology as a fully-fledged academic discipline. Tom's lectures would introduce him to terms such as subconscious and dissociation, indicating a psychological detachment from reality. At the Collège de France, crowds flocked to Henri Bergson's lectures. So to secure a seat, Tom needed to arrive early. He took notes in French as Bergson discussed la psychologie and la personnalité. Fundamental to these lectures was a notion of the self as fragmentary and in flux. His French had improved with the help of a private tutor, recently married Henri-Alain Fournier, the brilliant young writer who was at the heart of Parisian literary life. Tom was given suggestions about what to read. When I first came to Paris, I first read Boubou de Montparnasse. This novel of slum life by Charles-Louis Philippe became for him a symbol of the Paris of that time. Completed in March 1911, his Rhapsody, in which the flaws of the memory are made to dissolve, fuses Bergsonian flux with precise, sometimes sexualized images of nocturnal streets.
Every street lamp that I pass beats like a fatalistic drum, and through the spaces of the dark, the midnight shakes my memory as a madman shakes a dead geranium.
The geranium was Laforgue's. A swirl of exciting ideas and images surrounded Tom, and he was able to synthesize many of them in startling combinations. This was the making of him, the making of his style. Returned to Massachusetts, Tom was keen to remain Parisian. For some time, he wore what Conrad Aitken considered exotic left-bank clothing. Like composer Maurice Ravel and others in 1911 Paris, Tom, at Harvard's, sported a Malacca cane. He also parted his hair behind and took out a subscription to the Nouvelle Revue Française. Fired up by Paris, he now excelled in demanding areas of graduate scholarship. Tom's doctoral work in philosophy would involve about 5 years' further study. He grew interested in fundamental questions of knowledge and interpretation. His awareness of these was enhanced by his schooling in Indic and Oriental philosophy. Reading Bergson in French, then in English, he also read Patanjali in the original Pali, the Upanishads in Sanskrit, Heraclitus in Greek, Kant in German, Dante in Italian, and as for Spinoza, he read that great Jewish philosopher in elegant 17th century Latin. No other major 20th century poet was so strenuously educated.
Tom Mannion was reading from Young Eliot by Robert Crawford, which was abridged for radio by Katrin Williams. The producer is Duncan Minchell. And tomorrow at the same time, it's Harvard, then A Taste of Paris.
Did your mother not tell you never to put another person in danger?
Yes, but I had no money. Nowhere else to go.
Four extraordinary stories.
I'm probably the tallest girl you've ever seen. I'm probably the tallest girl in the whole wide world that ever there was.
A journey, a regret, a memory, and a secret.
There's much about me that you have yet to discover.
Drama over on BBC Radio 4 Extra. Tuesday to Friday at 11:15 and again in the evening at 9:15.
The news is next here on Radio 4, and then the singer-songwriter Joan Armatrading reveals the inspiration for her music and how the industry has changed during her career. And with Birds of a Feather back on our TV screens, Linda Robson talks about how comedy can be used to explore difficult topics. That's Woman's Hour in a couple of minutes.